Hello, everybody. I'm sorry for the technical difficulties. I usually am in my patio. I know I have connectivity problems in my patio, but sometimes it works. And I mean, I've been doing it for years, and sometimes it doesn't, maybe depending on the atmosphere, but I brought it upstairs. My wife's not here in our bedroom, so I'm in my bedroom now. And as long as you can hear me, I guess that's all that matters. It's cooler up here, too, rather than outside in the patio with the sun coming down. Anyway, so I've got a lot to tell you about. I've been gone for the last two Saturdays. I don't know if you knew, but BBS Radio was playing reruns or maybe music. I don't know. I leave it up to them to choose. And my cruise that I just came back from began on the 8th through the 16th. So I missed those two Saturdays, the 8th and the 15th. The last show I had, in other words, was on the 1st of June, Saturday the 1st, or was it the 2nd? No, the 1st. Anyway, so we took a cruise. Let me tell you all about it. We flew to Orlando. I couldn't get a direct flight, and that was a mistake. Even though our flight left at 5:19 Saturday morning from San Antonio, we had to go through Atlanta. And for those of you that have taken a cruise before, you got to get there before too late in the afternoon. Usually the cutoff time is around 2:30. The cruise ships usually leave about 4 o'clock. And so we went to Atlanta, and it was going to be a short layover there, and then we were going to catch connecting flight to Orlando, and then from Orlando take the shuttle from the airport to Port Canaveral, Cape Canaveral. And we were getting ready to, we were on the plane. No, excuse me, let me take that back. We were waiting to board, and they said the plane was hot, and we couldn't go on board the plane. And so then we waited for maybe 45 minutes. Finally, they boarded us. We got on the plane, and they said that there was a problem with the ventilation system in first class, and we had to wait an additional 45 minutes. So finally, we did take off, and we got into Orlando like around 1 o'clock. Normally, I mean, we were supposed to have been getting into there at 11:19, around 11 o'clock. I can't remember exactly. So we got our baggage and went to the transfer place for Carnival Cruise Lines, and they were gone. It was dark. So they had a little thing on the desk there that showed that there was an emergency number to call if anybody got there after hours. And I called the emergency number, and they said, "You just missed the bus. It left 5 minutes ago." And so I looked at my wife, and, oh, no. I said, "You're going to have to take a cab." So, okay. We went outside. There was a cab waiting right there. And we got in the cab. It was a really nice driver from Haiti. We had a nice conversation all the way there. It's only like 30 miles or so. But we still were in a bit of a hurry because we had to get there before 2:30. I got a call on the way there from Carnival Cruise Line. "Where are you?" "We missed the bus. We're in a cab. We're heading there. We'll be there shortly." Okay. Normally, they close the lines at 2:30, and it was 2:15, and we still had 23 miles to go. And I said, "We're on our way. Wait for us." "Okay, we'll wait for you." Turned out that we didn't need to be in that much of a rush because the boat leaves at 4 o'clock. Later on, one of the people that was in processing us, or one of the people that was greeting us, said, "Hey, the boat's still here, isn't it?" I mean, so we had up until a certain amount of time, maybe not all the way to 4 o'clock. Can't hold the whole boat up just for one person, you know. Can't hold the whole boat for one person. But we barely made it. So the lesson we learned was, if you ever go on a cruise and you fly to wherever you're going to go, spend the night before in the city where the port is, or close to the port, so that you don't have to rush getting to the port and there's no risk of having your flight canceled or something else happening where you won't get to the port on time. You know what I mean? So we got on board the Carnival Mardi Gras. That was the second time. The first time was in February of 22. And it is a nice boat. It's one of the newest and biggest of Carnival Cruise Lines. The capacity is 6,500 passengers, and I think they were sold out. And walking around the boat, it is so enjoyable. Now, personally speaking, and I try not to, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't like saying this because I pride myself on staying healthy and well, but the last two cruises, my wife and I, well, the last cruise before this one, I was a little bit sick. I got bronchitis, my own fault for doing the wrong things. The one before that, also, I was fighting with a little bit of a virus, and my wife also was sick. And we try not to, you know, go on a cruise feeling sick, but sometimes it happens. And we're veteran cruisers. Jackie just finished her 25th. That was her 25th cruise, and I've taken like 40. And so afterwards, I talked with Jackie, and I said, we're going to think about taking some other kind of vacation, you know, spending more time on the beach, because like being sick. And also, being honest with you, this time too, I fell down twice. I mean, I'm 70 years old, almost 70, but I do a lot of running. I think I've told you that before on previous shows, and I'm a sprinter. I do a lot of sprinting, but I don't like running around in circles. So I didn't see any option this time because there was a lot of people up on the deck. And so running around the track, and I started running this one time, and I smacked the surface of the track down. I hurt my thigh, landing on my pedometer, and my face hit the ground too, not too badly. And also my arm, my left arm. So I got up and I continued to. I was doing the run, walk a lap. I did 2 miles, 2-3 miles, and I thought, you know, I'll just work it out, get over it. But it was still kind of painful for the entire cruise. Actually, I'm still just now, I'd say almost 100% recovered. I know it's embarrassing to talk about this, but it's the truth. You know, I don't want to hide anything from you. On my radio show, I talk about all kinds of subjects, you know, so that's what happened. And then I got on the treadmill. I thought, well, maybe I'll stick with the treadmill. There's not as many people on the track. There was a ton of people on the track. It was like an obstacle course, you know. And the ship was very bouncy, and the waves were very big. You know, maybe that was one of the reasons why I fell. Hey, how about that, you know? I knew that. That was one of the possibilities, plus also the way I was running and going around in circles. I don't usually do that. I got the straightaway workout I was telling you about on previous shows. But anyway, so I tried the treadmill. When you know it, I walk about maybe 3/4 mile. Then I start running. Again, the seas are pretty rough. And next thing I know, boom, I hit the treadmill. I'm down on the treadmill, and it kicks me, throws me off it on the back. I'm landing on my back. Fortunately, there was a very nice man that came over, helped me get up. Are you okay? You want to get back on it? Yeah, I'll get back on it. That's it. You know, get on a horse right away so you're not afraid of it. Are you sure you're okay? Here, let me help you. It got me started again. Just a really nice gentleman. Some people, they come out of nowhere. You don't know who they are, but they're like guardian angels. They're like angels. You know, they help you out. They're very concerned, compassionate. It really blew my mind more than anything, more than the fall. And again, I hurt my arm and my right hand. But otherwise, I got back on and did I think I ran a mile. And I told my wife, and she's like, wow, you need to slow down. But it's not so much that. It's just, I think, maybe the rough seas and also my style. I'm used to doing it, my running in another style, sprinting, you know, instead of just distance slowly, you know, like 5.5 miles an hour. And so I'm almost back to 100%. But why? I don't know why cruises lately have been that way for me. So I told my wife, we got to plan some other vacations. You know, I've got my birthday coming up in August. I'm going to be 70 years old. And we were thinking about the option is going to New York. I've never been to New York or passed through there, but I wouldn't mind going there and spending maybe 3 days at a hotel. If it's just my luck, I would get mugged. I hope not. I'll say my prayers, you know. And if we do choose that option, then I think we'll be protected. But that's another option. And then also we could go to Corpus Christi, where we've gone before. It's 2 hours from San Antonio. Get a nice hotel on the beach and spend some beach time there, you know. Enjoying the one thing I really like, too, and I think you probably do also, is when you're lying down on the beach, you got an umbrella, right, your favorite beverage, and you can hear the waves rolling up on the shore. And it's so relaxing. You know, the sound of water is very relaxing to the mind and the body. Isn't that cool? And the beaches aren't that good in Corpus Christi. South Padre Island, a little bit further away, about 325 miles actually from San Antonio, are better. And of course, if you go to some beaches like down in the Caribbean, like Grand Cayman, my favorite, maybe Antigua, or any beach in Florida, you know, Key West is really good. That's an idea. I like Key West. So I'm a member of the Armed Forces Vacation Club because I served 22 years active duty. I retired in 2004. I continued working for the Army as a contractor for over 6 years and then became a civilian in 2010. I'll have 14 years in August. And so that is a possibility. I want to celebrate my 70th birthday. My wife celebrated her 70th birthday last year on a cruise to Alaska. She wore a sash across her chest that said, "It's my 70th birthday," and also a tiara on her head. There was a lot of people that were congratulating her. You know, on a cruise ship, that's really the best thing for me now on cruises, besides the food, and the food is always excellent. You know, very good quality food. You know, if you don't overeat, don't eat too many sweets. You know, that's the supreme challenge that I'll tell you the truth. But what I've learned as a veteran cruiser, don't eat too many sweets. You know, everything in moderation, in other words, and you'll be okay. Drink enough water and careful with the alcohol. You know, everything in moderation. But the food is always excellent quality, and the service is always very good. And the entertainment is always outstanding. You know, the singing and the dancing. You can't get much better than that. You know, you really can't. These people, they give it 110%, and they are very talented, and they come from all countries around the world, you know, like Ukraine or Romania or England, or even some from the U.S. Met a guy from New York by the name of John, and he was very, very good, you know, and some people from Russia and other countries in Europe, you know, and they're all trying to make it. They don't make a lot of money. But in my mind, they could be on Broadway, they could be on a Las Vegas stage, you know, they're that good, but they don't get paid a whole lot of money. When you get paid more money, that's incentive to grow and improve, you know. I told them that too. I said, you guys are so good. You can't get much better than what you do. If you were to go to Vegas and Broadway and they paid you more money, that's the only way I think you can grow and improve, you know. Same like with football players or professional sports athletes, in other words. If they get paid a whole lot more money than they're supposed to be, even better, you know, they grow, become better, they improve. Money does that, you know. But on the cruise ship, honestly, seriously, these people are cream of the crop. I mean, they look so good, and they're up there on stage doing it twice a night, but three or four times a week, week after week, month after month, until their contract ends. And they're young, but I know it takes a lot out of them. And they're so impressive. I'm so proud of how they do, you know. And what else on the cruise ship? There was a moon at night. Another bad thing was the weather was not good. It was cloudy. It wasn't a lot of sunshine. We went to Aruba. We didn't get off in Aruba. It was a nice, nice trip down there. But as I mentioned, the seas were a little bit rough, you know. And even with a big boat like that. But Aruba, you heard about that young woman named Natalie Holloway. She got murdered in Aruba. And it took a while to find out who had done it. And it took them a while to recover the body. And we decided not to get off there because we just didn't like the sound of that. And I know they're losing a lot of tourist business because other people feel the same way, too. How would you feel about going to Aruba, knowing about that woman, that young woman that was murdered there? Some people don't mind. They get off. And then the next stop was Curaçao, which is like the scuba diving capital of the world. I'm a certified scuba diver, but I used to do that when I was younger, and I don't have that desire now to risk, you know, going beneath the surface, because it is a dangerous endeavor. I knew a guy I worked with in my last duty assignment in Caracas, Venezuela, at the military group. He was a foreign national, Venezuelan foreign national, and he spoke English, you know, like this. You know, he would say, "Blake, how are you doing today?" A Venezuelan guy speaking with an English accent. I've seen black people like that, too, you know. You're kind of shocked. It blows your mind a little bit, thinking, you know, he's a African-American person, and they're speaking with an English accent. What's up with that, you know? Because if you teach somebody that from the very beginning as they go through school, then that's what they pick up. That's what they acquire, and that's just the way it is. So anyway, this guy named Simon, he was in the supply section of our military group. He was a scuba diver. He'd only just begun, like, a few months. And one day on the coast of Venezuela, he was with his scuba diving instructor, and a fisherman came up to them and said, "I've lost the engine off my boat down on the bottom of the ocean. Could you please go get it for me?" I don't know if he offered them any money, but out of the goodness of their heart, they did. But the thing was, it was down about 70 meters, which is about 210 feet, and they both died. They got down, and when you get down, the further you get down, the more quickly your oxygen runs out. And then when they recovered the bodies, their bodies were black. Their faces were black from oxygen depravity, you know. I think they probably got down, realized they'd gone too far, and tried to get back up quickly. And then the nitrogen poisoning does that also. It turns the skin color to black, and they both died a horrible death. And I knew them very closely. So scuba diving is a risky kind of sport, you know. You got to know what you're doing, and if you make a mistake, you could pay the ultimate price, you know what I mean. Can take a drink. So after Curaçao, we didn't get off there. We got off at Grand Turk. There was only three stops. Grand Turk is a very beautiful island in the Caribbean, and it's owned by the English. Is under the English Empire, the United Kingdom. There's only 5,000 people that live there. The beaches are nice. The water color, very beautiful. It was a sunny day that day. The water was colored turquoise, very beautiful turquoise color. So we went to the beach, took a tour, and we got there, and there was a smell in the air of sewage. I don't know what it was, if it was the tide comes in and goes out, and they had a lot of dry mud all around, you know, pools of water that were stagnating. There could have been outhouses, because I noticed that some houses probably didn't have running water. Whatever the reason was, it was a smelly beach. And I got in the water, and by the way, I noticed that there was a lot of rocks on the bottom. I didn't bring any shoes to walk in the water. Usually, beaches I've been on have sandy bottoms, and you can walk around. You don't have to worry about stepping on a ton of stones, if you know what I mean. So I wasn't too impressed with that. I spent a little time in the water, came back, and got some food. And it was very hot, too. I looked at my wife after we'd been there for a couple, 3 hours, and I said, "Are you hot?" She said, "Yeah." I said, let's go. So we didn't take the last bus. We took the next to the last bus back to the boat. And then we had a day at sea coming back Saturday the 15th, got back in on the 16th, and then it was back to work on the 17th of last week. And anyway, while we're away, my stepdaughter looks after the house. She feeds the pets, you know, the dogs. Got three dogs, two cats now, and they get chicken or beef, roast beef every night, sometimes with cheese, sometimes not. We spoil them, you know, spend a lot of money on them too. That's okay. And two of the dogs are getting old, probably 13, 14 years old, and they're not going to live too many more years, which is unfortunate. We just had a dachshund, male dachshund, who was my little buddy. He used to sleep between my legs at the foot of the bed, because I sleep on my back most of the time. And he also slept next to my wife, you know, he'd cuddle up to her at nighttime. But he was a really cool little fellow, very intelligent, and he started getting seizures, having seizures. And so we put him on, found out that his heart was weak, and also he had liquid in his lungs. We had to put him on medication, two different types of medication for his heart and his lungs. And that went on for about a year, and then he started having seizures, and it just got worse. And sometimes he would go like a month or two without any seizures. But then when we got back from the cruise that we went on in April, almost right away he died. Short after we got back, he just went into a kind of a seizure mode and didn't recover. And he was making these little noises like he was in pain. And then he just, life came out of him and passed away. And we were both crying. It was sad. Because he was our little buddy that had lived with us for over 10 years, you know. Other people experience that too. They become like family members. Anyway, so then we found another dog at a dog park. My wife was walking Goldie, our American Pit Bull Terrier, female, who was, like I said, about 13, 14 years old. And she was in the dog park, and here comes this little German short-haired pointer puppy. And he's barking at them, but he was emaciated, and his ribs were showing. And she put down a bottle of water for him to drink, and he drank it all up. And so she brought him home, and I was a little bit reluctant at first, you know, because we just lost a dog. But it turned out to be the right decision, because everyone was kind of depressed from the dachshund passing away. His name was Mr. Beta. So now we've got Lenny, our new family member, our new addition to the family, Lenny. And he's a cool dog. Very cool, very strong, running around, very healthy. And everyone loves him, you know. And only in my room, I'm trying to keep him away from my bed because he's woken me up one night. So I've got to spray a bottle to spray water at him if he doesn't do what I want him to do, you know, because I, and Goldie, this is really her room. She sleeps on the bed with us, the American Pit Bull Terrier. And he's a puppy, and he's been tearing things apart. And I don't want him to come in our room and start tearing things apart and wake me up in the middle of the night, which he's done once before. So I put the water bowl down on the floor next to my bed, and he's been leaving us alone. But he comes in here anyway. He goes over to my wife's side of the bed. He'll go in the bathroom with my wife. Here he is right now. Hey, 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 come on. He's learned to, he fears the water bottle, which is a good thing. But I don't like spraying them unless I have to. But he also bites, you know, bite your hand, bite your butt. So I try and stop him from doing that to me. And I try talking with him, but sometimes he just can't reason with a puppy, you know. He doesn't understand the water bottle. And according to the internet, that is an acceptable way to train dogs to not do things. And he's a cool dog. I talk to him, you know, kind of like, if you can talk with the animals, they say that's quite a skill. So, and he's very intelligent. He seems to understand most of what I talk to him about. And Goldie, too, she's very intelligent. If you talk with animals, they listen, you know. As long as you're real and authentic, they appreciate that, you know. I'm learning. I used to be kind of mean to animals and, over 10 years ago. I'm not proud of it. I don't even like talking about it. But I used to hit a couple of our dogs, and I don't like doing that now. Not at all. even if they bite me or, you know, break something or chew something up, that's very valuable. I wouldn't do that now. Fortunately, I've got control of my temper in that regard. But I know a lot of people still abuse dogs. And I don't want to do that because I know that when I have my life review, when I pass away on that day, I don't know how far into the future, hopefully far into the future, so I can learn more. You know, I love learning. Each day is an opportunity to learn new things. And we're all here to learn, you know, and we ought to try to extend our life as much as we can. 100 years plus if possible, you know. And I want to learn as much as I can. And when we do pass away, however, I guarantee you, I tell you the truth. You have to believe me because I've learned from other people. I've read a lot of books. And I don't have anything to gain by telling you this. No money. I have a book. Excuse me. I'm going to take a drink. I have a book in the Amazon Kindle bookstore, Brain and the Golden Soul. It's chock-a-block full of spirituality. And that's why we're here on Earth, to develop ourselves spiritually. And that's the truth, whether you believe it or not. We are spirits in the material world. That's the truth. And my book has 80 pages, 30 chapters of hardcore spirituality, you know, that some people can't handle because they are where they are, where they're at in their soul's evolution. Some people can't handle too much, and that's understandable, you know. It all depends on how many past lives you have as to how advanced of a soul you are, how much knowledge you have, how much knowledge your soul has gained from past lives. But when we do pass away, we will have a life review, and you'll see everything that you've done in your life. I mean, everything. Everything! Even interactions with people, especially interactions with people, how you've affected them in a positive way. Maybe you got into a fight with somebody, and you punched them. I've never done that. I used to hit my sister a little bit because she used to get me in a headlock. But nothing serious, you know, just like pounding her on the back, and then she would get me into a headlock. And that would hurt, you know. I'd try to get out of it and wrench my neck, but that's okay. You know, I forgive her and she forgives me, I'm pretty sure. But in a fight, you know, out of anger, I've never hit anybody. I've been hit before, punched in the face. Two or three times. But you relive that. You experience it from your perspective and the other person's perspective. So it's a learning experience on how you treat other people. That's what it's all about. How you treat other people. You will be held accountable. We will be held accountable for our actions. And the afterlife will determine if you are able to graduate to a higher level of existence, a higher level of evolution on another planet in either our Milky Way galaxy or another galaxy throughout the universe. And there are lots and lots of other planets out there in different stages of evolution where you can find a place for your soul, the right place for your soul to evolve. We are living in the university of the universe. Planet Earth is like a school. And if you don't believe that, well, you'll find out later on when you pass away. And don't regret having not known better or have remorse for should have done this or should have done that. Now's the time to grow, to learn, to act so that you can graduate from this existence with honors, if you know what I mean. You know, we get so caught up with our daily lives and raising our children and our jobs, making money, that we neglect our own spirituality. So there's lots of resources besides my book. YouTube has countless videos of near-death experiences, people, and you have to trust what they say, the majority of them. Yes, some are hoaxers, and I can tell. I got a feeling sometimes when I watch somebody, and they say, I had a near-death experience, I met Jesus. And I can just look in their eyes, and maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe it's not fair for me to judge them, but I can see the authentic, the ones that are authentic. I think I'm a pretty good judge of character, you know. I've talked about this before on previous shows. O.J. Simpson, Did he kill Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman? In my opinion, he didn't. I met him and had a chance, a small, brief interaction, but I could tell that he's a good person. Although, you know, people can change, but you have to understand that Nicole Simpson was into crack cocaine. She was taking cocaine and crack cocaine, and Ron Goldman, too. They were involved in selling drugs, taking drugs back then. And where'd you get the drugs from? The cartel. And when you owe a lot of money to the cartel, don't you know, they come collecting. She owed $50,000. Check it out if you don't believe me. And she went to OJ and asked him, and he's was a wealthy man back there, but he knew that she was involved with drugs, and she was a tough woman, you know. I mean, she had a temper. Yes, and maybe he did hit her, but she probably hit him a few times too. You know, he probably had to defend himself. That's no excuse for hitting a woman. I feel that way, same way too. My parents always taught me never to hit a woman. So cartel, when they come collecting, they send hitmen, you know, and these guys are the kind of guys that will do what was done with them. They had what they call the Colombian necktie. They slit their throats and pull their tongues out. And OJ wouldn't have done that. Believe me. That's my opinion, that Nicole and Ron Goldman were killed by two Colombian hitmen because they owed money to the cartel. What was the point of me telling you this? Because I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. And watching these near-death experiences on YouTube, I mean, there's some, like, if you don't believe me, check them out. You know, if you disagree with me, fine, that's one thing. But if you disagree with me, at least check out some of the things that I talk about. Some people, they form their opinions without doing any research, in other words. And that's wrong. How can you have an opinion when you haven't really done a lot of research to find out whether something is right or it's wrong? Donna Rebadeau, Rebadow, had a near-death experience. She drowned. I mean, she really drowned, okay? I mean, there's no joking about that. Some people have witnesses right there, you know? And they have these experiences. You could say it's a dying brain, but they go places. I mean, this is more than a dream. This is like real outside the physical body, as if they were in their physical body experiencing it, but they're in their spirit instead. So she popped out of her body. She went into outer space, kind of like eternity. They went through a veil, like a saran wrap veil, and she met the creator of the universe who came up upon her. She said he was like, not a he or she, actually, male and female energy field, kind of like the aurora borealis, all different colors, with the colors of the rainbow, an electrical being that she had a telepathic conversation with, who said to her, I am the creator of the universe. Or actually, I stand corrected, she said, you are the creator of the universe. And in her mind, she heard back right away, I am the creator of the universe. And she said in her mind, telepathically, you know everything. She heard back right away, I know everything. And then the creator said, I even know how many grains of sand are on a beach in New Zealand. And immediately she was rocketed down to this beach. And she knew in her mind how many grains of sand were on that beach. And God, the creator of the universe, also said to her, I even know how many hairs you have on your head. Now, isn't that cool? Think about it. The creator of the universe knows how many hairs you have on your head. Isn't that some amazing knowledge? So that's one YouTube video that you could check out if you don't believe in near-death experiences and want to trust the people who have experiences. Because if you do trust them and believe in those experiences, then that will help your spirituality so that you can increase that spirituality and you can graduate from this existence, transition to the afterlife in a more evolved state so that you can make it to a planet of a higher category of evolution in your next life. And that's the truth. I'm going to take a drink of water. Hold on. Also, I'm going to close the door here. Give me a few seconds, please. Okay, I'm back. I closed the door because my stepdaughter came upstairs, turned the light on in the hallway, and was out there, and so I just wanted not to be disturbed. So I closed the bedroom door. Now it's just me and Goldie in here, but that's okay. So where else can you get information about developing yourself spiritually? Also, now check this out, please. There are YouTube videos which are entitled Astral Legends. That's the name of the people that do the videos, Astral Legends. And they'll tell you all about the different extraterrestrials that are out there in the universe. Most of them are humanoid. I mean, evolution in the universe is an amazing thing, my friends. Think about all the life here on Earth. You have insects, you've got reptiles, birds, amphibians, fish. Believe it or not, I'll tell you the truth, every single one of those species is evolving until one day, and I'm talking about dogs and cats and lions and tigers and even insects will stand up on their hind feet and reach a level of intelligence where they'll be able to transcend their atmosphere in a spaceship and go and explore the universe. If you don't believe that, well, then you're not ready to receive that truth. But look at those Astral Legend videos. Besides the humanoid type with different colors of skin, mainly blue skin, different colored eyes, different size eyes, the grays, which you know about, there's some that are tall, some are short human beings that are like 3 feet tall, different colored hair, different texture skin. There's so many different thousands of different varieties of extraterrestrials in the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets, which is like a community in the galaxy. And why haven't they reached out to us? They have. Why haven't we joined them? Because we're not ready for it, because we're a violent species that doesn't even believe that we're not alone in the universe. We don't believe that we are alone. Let me rephrase that. A lot of people don't believe that we are not alone in the universe. Did I say that right? In other words, some people believe there's no life out there. How about that? Some people don't believe there's life elsewhere in the universe. So right now we are kind of stuck in between this gap of evolution where we don't know there's life out there. Kind of like when people thought the world was flat, or before Copernicus said the Earth is not the center of the universe, that we revolve around the center of the universe. And why would the ETs want to make contact with us when we don't even believe that they exist out there? Right? Does that make sense? I think so. I wouldn't. If I was an extremely intelligent extraterrestrial, why would I want to show up in Joe Smo's backyard when he doesn't even believe they exist? Now, the people that believe in them maybe have some experience. Maybe haven't seen a UFO, or they know somebody that's seen one, or who was abducted by aliens, extraterrestrials. You know, those kind of people, they would believe that we're not alone in the universe. And if all this life here on Earth, as I've mentioned before many times, by accident, why couldn't it happen by accident on any planet? How many people think that there aren't any other planets out there besides our planets in our solar system? How many people think there aren't any other planets in the universe other than what's in our solar system? Anybody? Come on. They're discovering planets every day. Those are the kind of people that believe that we didn't actually send astronauts to the moon, that that was all staged. But those people, they are who they are. They're atheists. They always take the opposite stance, which is good in a way because they kind of strengthen our faith. But all you have to do is look at some videos on YouTube about the Apollo project, the Apollo 11. And look at the intelligence in the eyes of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and Mike Collins. Those guys, they wouldn't fake something like that. And they've got video, actual video, landing on the moon. Yeah, maybe that could have been staged in an Arizona desert. But what about, and they could have doctored some photography, you know. But if those people don't believe, one day they will. Maybe after they transition to the afterlife, which is unfortunate, you know, because they're not doing their soul any favors by being that way. You know, it's like learning. They refuse to learn. Some people are like that. And they're not fulfilling their mission on Earth. I say to those people that don't believe that we actually landed on the moon and that 12 American astronauts walked on the moon. 12 American astronauts walked on the moon. The last one was Eugene Cernan in 1972. If you do a little research about those astronauts and Eugene Cernan, read his book, The Last Man on the Moon, you know that what they said was true. But people will be what they want to be. People are entitled to their own opinion. You know, I'm not going to try to convince them. I'm not trying to convert them. They'll find out for themselves. And there's co-creator gods in the making, and we all are. And I know we're stubborn sometimes, very stubborn. I'm the same way. We like to do things our own way. And we want to find out for ourselves the truth. But I'm just offering you some advice that find out the truth before it's too late, because guess what? You're not invincible. Neither am I. Now is the time to learn about the nature of the spirit, about the nature of our universe, that we are not alone out there. Like, all this life on Earth happened by accident. It could happen by accident on some of the planets they're discovering with the Kepler Space Telescope and the James Webb Space Telescope. And that's the truth, my friend. And they've already discovered, like, I think close to 1,500 planets and over 300 solar systems. And that's a fact. And you can't refute. That's irrefutable logic, you know. But I'm not trying to convince those people, because they'll never be convinced. But I would like to debate them, you know. But some people, you reach a point where you can't debate them any further because their rationale just runs out. Their reason, they start not making any sense. But that's okay. I still love them, you know. If you're listening, I love you. You're entitled to your opinion. But all I can do is say, grow before it's too late. You know, I'm trying to do that same thing myself. But if all of this life didn't happen by accident, and there really is a creator of the universe, and there are co-creator gods of solar systems, if they had the knowledge and the power to create all the life on Earth, there was over 1 million types of insects, over 30,000 types of fish, over 10,000 types of birds and reptiles, over 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals, thousands of different types of flowers and trees and fruits and vegetables. If they had the power and knowledge, God has the power and knowledge to create, if you don't believe in them, male and female, a mother and father God, or if you just want to believe in the father God, you know, I don't know why, because father God wants a woman by his side. You're going to find out. I guarantee it. When you get up there in the throne room and stand next to the father God, you're going to see sitting right next to him a female spirit, because you need a male and female spirit to create spirit children and the planets. Words is how they do it. In the beginning was the Word, and Word was with God. My point is that the Mother and Father God have co-created solar systems. That's what we are. We're co-created gods in the making, going through that process of evolution to the process of reincarnation, refining our souls, learning, gaining knowledge, living on different planets, having all these past lives. Do we reach that level of perfection where we know how to create, utilize the forces of the universe to create planets and suns and moons and spirit children? It's amazing. But like I was saying, if a mother and father God, if they have the power and knowledge to create all this life, or let's just say the creative universe has the knowledge and the power to create all this life on Earth. Logically, right? Logically, the creator has the power and knowledge to create life anywhere. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, to say the creative universe can make over 1 million types of insects, over 30,000 types of fish in the ocean, seas, rivers, and lakes, over 10,000 types of birds, over 10,000 types of reptiles, over 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals, and the power that's needed and the knowledge to create all that life. You don't think the creator can create anything? The creator is magical, can do anything, anything, anywhere, on any planet, anywhere in the universe. Bottom line, and that is irrefutable logic. I don't care what anyone says, whether they're an atheist or want to take the opposite stance. That's fine. If you want to bolster my faith, my ability to believe, I'm not going to get angry at you, okay? Some people like them to get angry at you. But I'm getting too old for that, to tell you the truth, you know. I mean, I might get a little bit fired up, my blood pressure a bit high, but the purpose of getting that way is to learn how to handle it. If you don't know how to handle it, then it's counterproductive, if you know what I mean. So you just have to learn how to deal with people like that. It can be disruptive. And you take it in stride, stand your ground, right? Try not to be impolite, just be nice. Like Patrick Swayze said in Roadhouse, remember that movie? He was telling his bouncers, just be nice. And one of the guys said, what if somebody calls my mother a bad name? Well, he looked at him and said, well, is she? Or somebody pulls out a knife. Well, that's when you stop being nice. Or, you know, somebody is disruptive, you be nice as long as you can, in other words, until it's time to not be nice. And that's such a good example of what I was trying to talk about, the message I was trying to convey. But the point is, always be nice to people. They're worthy of dignity and respect. Every last human being is. You know. How am I doing on time, Doug? Okay, thank you. I heard a noise. So, well, thank you for listening, my friends. Remember, don't fear or worry about things that are beyond your control. Always say a prayer. Pray to the creator of the universe. Go outside in your backyard tonight. I encourage you, look up to the stars and say a prayer to the creator of the universe. I guarantee you, the likelihood of the creator answering you is very good, because he, she is out there. Thank you for listening. I love you very much. Talk to you next week, God willing. Take care. And may the Creator bless us all, everyone. Bye-bye.